Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Are you feeling a bit animated? Well, come on over to the Wicked Anime Podcast on the Nerdy Show Network, a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to animation, Japanese culture, and all things anime. With a true industry perspective, we're always diving deeper than school uniforms and tentacle monsters. Join us on the Wicked Anime Podcast, nerdyshow.com/wickedanime. It's Wicked A!
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
I'm Boar.
I'm Trench.
And I'm glad to be back in the Nerdy Show studio doing a regular Nerdy Show episode. How novel.
It's been weird.
A long time. hopefully everyone out there listening has enjoyed the strange series of interviews and travelogues that we've been posting over the past month and plus, and there's been plenty of things that we haven't covered that have been happening. So we're gonna take it on right now. What's everybody been up to while I've been gone?
I bought a Switch finally.
Oh shit!
Yeah, I finally hopped on the Switch train or Switch track. That sounds better. I hopped on the Switch track, and I got Zelda. I got Mario Odyssey. And I got Mario Kart, because I skipped over Wii U.
Mm-hmm. So you got like the three games that are like worth getting?
Yeah.
Right, well, now, and because that's all that's there.
Well, and Splatoon 2.
That's debatable.
No, it is not.
Oh, snap. There's about to be a fight.
Controversy.
But I finally understand all the times you're talking about Korok seeds and shrines and shit. Like, I know what you're doing now. I know you're just out there expanding your inventory.
Welcome to 2017.
Hell yeah!
Woohoo! Do you enjoy it?
Yeah. I've been traveling a lot for work, so taking the Switch with me has been extremely convenient for that.
Yeah, it is the best. Yeah. I mean, I love traveling with it.
Me and the Switch and a big old battery pack can handle any flight.
What was the question, Trench?
He asked if I was playing footsie because I was moving a cable off my foot.
Oh. Well, you guys haven't seen each other in a while either, so it's all understandable.
It's got a lot of
we've
got to
reach across the table and hold hands for a couple minutes.
You got long hands.
Don't explain.
There's a very recent development in our collective lives, and that is that...
In our lives.
As of like 15 minutes ago.
Yeah. For me, it started last night, and that is Neil Cicerega, a.k.a. Lemon Demon, who we've talked about on the show before. He's kind of a nerd internet celebrity. He recently posted this bizarre like meme thing where the service Filmstruck wants you to post images of four films that have defined you, and with the hashtag Filmstruck4 or something like that. And he posted four clips of Tommy Lee Jones, you know, the actor from The Fugitive and from Men in Black, in very strange situations, and what I interpreted to be a Japanese canned coffee ad, which in fact it turned out to be for a company called Boss Coffee.
Well, yeah, he's the coffee boss.
Is he? Is he known as that?
Yeah.
I didn't know him as that.
Commercials describe him as Alien Jones.
Yeah.
If you go to Japan, you see him everywhere.
Oh, so when you went to Japan, you experienced this?
Yeah, this was like 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah. Well, starting in 2006, Tommy Lee Jones began a coffee commercial series that I think may still be ongoing. It's hard to tell. It's got to be like one of the longest running ad series centering around like a single actor, like outside of like, I don't know, the Dunkin' Donuts guy.
The Dos Equis guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even that's, he's got to be have longer than the Dos Equis guy.
Longer than that by this point.
Yeah.
I think the meme has lived on longer than his ad campaign.
Yeah. At this point, yeah, probably. Yeah,
absolutely. So
that ad has a half-life.
Yeah.
This, like many Japanese ads, has a relatively plot-centric, like, sitcom kind of thing to it. And Tommy Lee Jones is playing an alien that's taken on the visage of Tommy Lee Jones and is in Japan doing menial labor. And then you start to realize that he's been on this planet a long time. And there's not really a plot, and it doesn't have strong continuity exactly, but you'll see him doing some menial job with this narration that's not his voice at all, looking extremely stoic. And then he'll crack open a can of Rainbow Mountain Blend, and shit just happens.
It's like they're little, it's almost like they're little tone poems about hard work and what it means in today's society.
Yeah.
And little brain droppings.
And every now and then, Tommy Lee Jones will get laser eyes or build a force field or destroy something with super strength or grow gigantic ears or something you wouldn't expect. And every now and then, Tommy Lee Jones will actually speak in Japanese, which is very weird. But there, I mean, it's a delightful rabbit hole that I fell down for at least 30 minutes because there's tons of them on YouTube. And then Doug found this other thing, which apparently has been memeing a little bit.
Yeah.
For a product, what's it called?
It's a gummy candy. I can't pronounce or remember some with an S. Something gummies.
Yeah, and there's like short gummies, and there's also like foot long gummies, like
more than a foot.
It looked like, two
a yardstick.
Yeah.
What was it? Fruit by the foot, like fruit roll up things.
But elongated.
It's, yeah.
And like it's,
like they know, normally
gummy candy,
they,
not
they normally just come in like little short strips, like the size of a Starburst. And I guess the novelty is that you can tear them in half to share with somebody, I guess is the idea. Almost like a Kit Kat gummy, which is weird to say, but I guess it's true. And there's pink and whatever. Then they're debuting the new long one. And the long one's like, Trench says, like, was that like a yard?
No, yeah, it was like 2 or 3 feet.
It was at least like 2 or 3 feet like this because he was swinging it.
Yeah,
that's all that stuff. And yeah, it's been making the rounds online, and that one has a very consistent story. It has a very serious plot that goes up and down and all around.
Basically, you watch it all together, and you can watch it with subs like in its entirety, and it's like a full-length Adult Swim. Like it could be one of the late-night Adult Swim things, like Too Many Cooks. It's basically the same length.
Yeah.
And it's... I watched the first installment of it, and I thought, well, you know, this is no Tommy Lee Jones.
I almost feel like this is like the first commercial series that we don't want to talk about spoilers.
Yeah, like, no, we shouldn't. I should say it starts soft, and you'll be like, whatever, and then it starts to get
long.
Really, it gets long and has really strong continuity and tells you a full story by the end of it, and it doesn't ever go where you think it's going to go.
No,
a lot of symbolism. A lot of symbolic,
yes,
subliminal stuff.
And there's a good chance that Wicked Animes cover this on one of their shows. There's a very good chance they've touched both these things, but I don't know for certain. But we'll link to them on this episode's page.
Maybe. I think I remember seeing Evan or one of the guys post.
I actually think I may have discovered it from Flame On's page.
Really?
I think so.
Oh. So hey, if you've heard this on the Nerdy Show Network, if you're a more avid listener than we're capable of being, then sorry for old hat.
It's new to us.
Well, how about you, Matt? What's up?
Oh, shit. You're going the opposite direction than usual. Okay. So I have been mostly, you know, a continuation of the last time I was on, just focusing on myself. I started going to counseling like 2-3 weeks ago. Doing that, trying to get the rest of school finished up. I've got I'm building a tabletop campaign in Sagas.
Nice. Awesome.
That is, I've got a lot of work on that still to do.
Fantasy Sagas, modern Sagas,
fantasy. I'm pulling a lot of inspiration from Lord of the Rings and, some from World of Warcraft. I'm going to do a charity stream next Sunday, the 29th.
Do tell. What do people need to know about that?
Well, I'm still working out a lot of the details because I've been meaning to do that. Like, I've been meaning to set this up like all month, but I've been just slammed. So other than it's going to be next weekend, the 29th, I haven't worked out everything else yet.
What's the charity for?
April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, mm-hmm. so it's going to be for sexual assault awareness and prevention and
awesome
all that stuff.
How about you, Doug?
Carrying on work like normal, getting ready for the tax season and getting ready for all that fun stuff. And
what? Wait, that
tax season?
Did you file an extension?
Hopefully, you're done. No. We did. It's complicated, but we did. we filed it on time, but then the marketplace sent in and said, "Oh, by the way, you also get this." And it's like, you know, this is late, right? Like, this is, and we were told, it's again, we were told one thing, and then the mail says another thing, so we have to go back, and we're going to make adjustments.
I was going to say, yeah, so you know, you're a little bit behind the
times. Oh, no, I know, yeah, no, but we were, like, prepping for it, because we've always had trouble, like, every year, so it's like, all right, we think we finally got all of our ducks in a row, and then the healthcare end of it was just like, no matter how much you plan.
I did think that was really weird on Facebook when I saw it pop up, like, Doug is in a relationship with taxes, yeah. It's complicated.
Yeah.
So wait, is this extra complicated taxes because of Nina's immigration status?
No,
it's just the government.
Yeah, it's because we got our healthcare through the marketplace because we were poor and we need the cheapest healthcare coverage possible.
I got healthcare through the marketplace.
Yeah, it's and every year for whatever reason they screw it up and they don't deliver our 1095A's on time and we have to file without it. Then we have to get the letter from the IRS saying, hey, why don't you have the proper paperwork? And then we say, because they didn't send it, and no one believes it. And then eventually we get it. And then this time...
Of course not. The government not doing things in a timely manner? Who would ever believe that?
Not to mention, this is the second year in a row where they sent it to our old address that we haven't lived at for over 2 years.
Oh.
Huh.
So...
That's really weird. See, if you get health insurance through your employer, that question comes down to, do you have health insurance?
Right.
Yes, I'm done.
Right. Except for me to get
that's all I had to do was say yes.
For me to get it through my employer, it would cost even more out of pocket for me.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, why is it so much more simple?
I don't know. And it's so I went to H&R Block and they were like, oh, well, that's crazy, but they were nice and stuff. And then they mentioned, wait, you talked to them on the phone to try and change your address for the past 2 years? I'm like, yeah, every year this happens. I call them like 3-4 times and I say, you're not sent to the right place. And they always, I hear them clickety clack on the keyboard and they change my address. They say, don't ever do it over the phone. You have to send in a form. I'm like, what the fuck kind of form do I have to do? Oh, it's actually called an 8822. Here you go. And they had to give me like another document. All the sole purpose of this random ass document is to
create a paper trail that you did it.
That I did it. And it's just like, can anything go right? Can anything ever go right with any of it? But it's, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's just frustrating because you think it's at least going to end on the 17th.
It's nice to know that even over 30 years later, the crippling bureaucracy of Terry Gilliam's Brazil is still in full effect in the modern world.
Yeah.
Someday, well, you know, it's going to be
like at this point, we could automate the entire process of doing your taxes. The only reason it's not is because it would completely eliminate the tax preparation industry.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. No. I'm very aware of that, and I want people to have jobs. But boy, I think that this reform should happen, and that all those jobs should be eased into other jobs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. I don't know. People. See, now we're going into a place where I'll go off on a rant about universal basic income and how we should just eliminate all pointless jobs.
Hey, man. I might not have long, long arms, but I'll high five you over that one. You're at the opposite end of the table, though.
I'll spare everybody the rant, but
well, we've had variations.
I'm anti useless job.
Yeah.
I'll say, and semi-related to the commercial up and down the story arcs, the thing that surprised me about the Tommy Lee Jones one was that it was about the coffee, and this is like the second or third time that I've seen other countries try to do a story arc with a coffee brand, but then it's now obviously with candy and stuff like that they're doing or whatever, but it seems to have originated, I don't know if I've talked to you about this, Cap, the Gold Blend commercial series starring Anthony Head from Buffy the Vampire Slayer fame as Giles.
I know that that's a thing, but I've never seen it.
It was a wild success in England, so much so that America copied it with Taster's Choice, recasting the same two actors but giving them American accents.
So wait, there's somebody whose name is Anthony Head?
Yeah.
From Buffy. Giles from Buffy.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That guy is really lucky that his name wasn't Richard.
Yeah.
Well, his middle name is Belzend.
Or not.
Are you serious?
No.
Because, wow.
I fell down that rabbit hole on YouTube a couple months back of watching all those and trying to find them, because there is a full, it's like a soap opera. Like, it's intentionally, like, if you miss one, you're like, what the hell is happening? What's going on? But not in a funny sense, but in a way that they were actually trying to recreate, like, a romance with it. And people, like, flip their shit over it in, like, the late 80s, early 90s. So I went on this, like, quest. I have to hunt them down on YouTube, and I would find them, and then I would save them, and then they would get deleted. I'm like, fuck, and then it get re-uploaded. So then I, since they kept on getting deleted, I just downloaded them as soon as I found them, and I even made my own compilation. I'm missing one commercial, but I think I've got like 12 out of the 13. And
wow, that is a that's an intense quest, Doug.
Yeah, because they, it literally looks like a soap opera. Like, you'd think you're, it's like they film it with this quality that looks like a thing, like a TV show, like you just interrupted halfway through, and then it ends on a cliffhanger, and you're like, what? And then all of a sudden the logo comes up, and you're like, oh fuck, and then it picks up right where it left off and continues.
Whew. Okay.
So it started, I guess I'm wondering if that's what started the fad. And maybe, because they've redone it in Italy, they've redone it in Japan, clearly, and so on and so on and so on, except now the format's changed to where they're no longer focusing on the romance part, they're doing it with Tommy Lee Jones.
Wow. Doug and I had a great time at North Carolina Comic Con Oak City.
Mm-hmm.
Which we haven't talked about on air. We'll eventually be talking about it on a future episode of Lightning Dogs, but yeah, that was a great show.
Yeah. And I for the longest time was saying I hate conventions. It's like, I like meeting people that are into the same stuff, but I hate walking through a giant mall all day on non-carpeted floors and BO and all the negative stuff that comes up. But this was actually totally awesome. This was a great experience that changed my opinion on a lot of convention contrivances.
And why was that?
Because of the people involved, and because it was small and it was focused on one particular thing. It wasn't just like, everyone buy stuff, buy your t-shirts, buy your lunch boxes. This was like, this is a comic convention, and people here to meet the creators, talk to artists, get commissions, and just geek out over really specific
and
stuff.
Cosplay as Homestuck.
there was a couple of homes. Always,
that's a guarantee.
Always, people were cosplaying, but it wasn't. It just so wasn't about buying shit. I mean, yeah, there's stuff where you could buy stuff, but that wasn't like the focus of the convention. It wasn't just about moving bodies through the thing. Like, it was really focused on the content, which was cool. I actually was like, wow, I kind of want to see all this stuff, but I can't because I'm stuck in my own booth. But it was rare because, like, we went to MegaCon a couple years ago, like, back
at
or whatever.
At this point, it's like probably 4 years ago.
Yeah, and I just remember being like, I don't want to be here. There's nothing here I want to see. I'm sick of this.
MegaCon has turned into a hellhole.
Yeah. So it ruined conventions for me.
But it used to be nice.
Yeah. And even the Star Wars Celebration, which is cool in its own ways, there was a lot of stuff I'd like to see, but it just overall, too many people. It was too big and too much about this t-shirt you could only get here. Wow, only at Celebration. Am I right? No. No, it's on the internet 24 hours later. No one cares.
Damn it, Kathleen. Stop your shilling.
Yeah. The shilling aspect of most conventions is something I don't enjoy. But this one was very different and a heck of a lot of fun. I would like to go back.
Well, hey, lucky us. There's two North Carolina Comic Cons a year. And we will, in theory, as far as I know, be going to the one in Durham in October. Or November. In the fall.
It made me think of, like, wow, when comic conventions first started and they were held in the basements at the Ramada Inn because nobody wanted to just hide. No one wants to see you, you nerds. No, we don't want to have just the regular folks.
Get your stink out of here,
yeah.
Basement dweller.
Go back in the basement where you belong. That's like, it kind of had that feeling of like, oh, when it's a small group of people, there's a camaraderie more than just the throngs of nerd culture just moving through nonstop.
Yeah, interesting about North Carolina Comic Con is that it is, like, there are small conventions. It is not a small convention, but it is comparatively a small convention to the pop culture clusterfucks that are sort of like driving certain parts of the industry right now. So yeah, it's a good show. It's a focus show. It's
sounds
a fun
like a good
show.
Band name. Pop culture clusterfuck.
Yeah. Feel free to take that. We'll play your music on the show, I think.
I'll learn how to play an instrument.
Okay. Do that.
The kazoo.
Jaw harp.
And then I went to LA to some State of the Empire stuff, which unfortunately kind of fell through, which has been chronicled in State of the Empire. But also had a good time. Saw Isle of Dogs at the new Wes Anderson movie at the Academy of Motion Pictures, and saw Jeff Goldblum in the person being Jeff Goldblum, which was a lot of fun. It's a charming, peculiar man. I also saw Jay-Z, weirdly, at a vegan Mexican restaurant.
Okay.
That's kind of That's
weird.
Yeah, it was weird. It was like...
Crazy for this one, Jay.
It's like just in passing. And the prior episode of Nerdy Show we did was me in Nashville talking to Colin and Luke about the stuff I did there. So that's been chronicled extensively. But one thing we didn't mention was Ready Player One. Has anyone else seen it?
Negative.
No. I've been kind of intrigued. I've got the book, but I've never read it.
Yeah. I mean, I had extreme reservations about the book, and I had extreme reservations about the film. It had every chance to be extremely pandering and is at times, talking about the book here specifically. But we did a Nerdy Show book club episode about it, which, you know, I'll pass everybody on to for a more extensive discussion about this pop culture scenario of, like, we're in the future and this guy started a contest and he was obsessed with the 1980s. So now everybody got obsessed with the 1980s the world over because they were all obsessed with winning this contest that would take, you know, you could win his empire. Mm-hmm. and go into this virtual world, and the actual world's a dystopia. And it was weird because it took this pop culture fanboyism thing and made it, like, actually created an explanation for it that validated everyone quoting stuff all the time in this weird pissing contest of, oh, I know this thing and I know this thing. And there's lots of reasons that it could be done poorly, but it was actually, like, I had fun reading it. And the movie I was really apprehensive about, because Steven Spielberg, I feel, should not be directing this film. That's so narcissistic. Mm. Like, the book was done as a love letter to many of his properties. So why then should the guy who did those properties be the one? You need to have the gaze of the person who grew up loving that, not the gaze of someone who's like, in a state of Ouroboros like self masturbation,
wanting to shed that part of their career and move on to more serious stuff.
Right. So what? How the fuck did this happen? So I'm not sure. I had a lot of concerns about that. But the reality was is that the film is not perfect by any means, but it was fun and it did. I had no regrets in seeing it. I genuinely laughed. I genuinely enjoyed myself. It was a more user-friendly, general populist consumer version of the plot, and certainly, like, more action-centric. But, you know, I don't know if you I assume most people have probably seen the trailers for this. Like, yeah. They're very poorly done trailers. You don't have any idea what the plot is. And they just show you action sequences with, like, here's the Back to the Future DeLorean, like, cascading through a bunch of, like, inexplicable wrecking balls.
There's the Bigfoot monster truck.
Yeah. And what I was really surprised by is that when they do these action sequences, these fully CG action sequences throughout the film, they actually have a good sense of drama and a sense of stakes and a sense of energy. And the way they're choreographed is, like, well beyond what's normal for a major motion, like, summer blockbuster kind of thing. Like, Marvel has a really big problem with doing these huge action set pieces where nothing's happening. And, like, you know, the good guys are going to win. The stakes don't feel very high. And you're lucky if you get something that's not a featureless, field at late afternoon. But this was, I don't know who they pulled in for this, but Spielberg must have pulled in someone specifically from the video game industry to direct and choreograph these sequences, because they are unbelievable. Like, some of these sequences are poster childs for, like, here is why we use CGI to build these sequences, because this shit is impossible and we can do anything and the camera can be anywhere. Hmm. It's like everything that was wrong with Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within is done correctly in this movie in terms of computer animation and scenes in computer animation.
I was under the impression that the only thing Final Fantasy: Spirits Within did wrong is call itself Final Fantasy.
Well, that is the number one thing for sure. Yeah. But the other thing is that they directed it. They directed it like a film. They didn't, like, it was at the time, like, the most insane CGI film project that had ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they. When there was an explosion, they'd shake the camera and have characters wobble around like it was fucking Star Trek, the original series. So at no point did they take advantage of the medium they were working in, ever.
I mean, I think they were trying to fool you into thinking you were seeing real people, though.
They were, to a fault. Like,
sure. I just think there's an entirely different goal. Whereas, I mean, I would be curious to find out if Spielberg did direct any of the action scenes in something like this, where if it camera's zooming around so crazy. I mean, he did do some awesome stuff in Tintin.
That's true. Tintin was You know, you're right, Doug. I forgot about Tintin. Tintin was exceptional. And if you haven't heard the news, I'm happy to say the sequel is coming. It's happening. I think it's like 2020 or something, but we're going to get it. The Peter Jackson Tintin follow-up. Cannot freaking wait. I mean, really, lock me in a cryogenic freezer because Tintin is one of my favorite like film experiences still of like the past 10 years or whatever.
Really? I still haven't seen it.
Some criticisms that were leveraged against Ready Player One were about the, I think what Max Acree may have called weaponized nostalgia when talking with him about it on Facebook.
I've seen him and Call of Cthulhu Luke having...
Yeah, and I totally understand because there's one critically important thing that the film could have spent just a couple moments on that would have helped everyone get in the vibe a lot more, and that is that they never once implicitly stated that the world of the future that this film is taking place in was so impacted by the this game, this contest to win the keys to the Oasis, that that the entire like world shifted into fanboyism of the 1980s. That was a thing, the cultural thing that happened. It swelled up and affected the world around them. Because in that world, there's 1980s Doritos bags. Like, that's all Doritos bags are Doritos throwback bags. Like, that's just a thing. And all the people rattling off pop culture and so on, like, it is very shameless. And it is like winking at the camera and being like, hey, recognize this, recognize this, recognize this. But it's all actually like validated by this small sliver of plot that created this, you know, cultural sensation that sort of made that the norm.
So, and my understanding of the whole thing, having not read the book or watched the movie, is just like the real world is so shit that the only thing to do that is worth doing is to go into this video game world,
yeah,
where everything is the 1980s.
Not exactly. It's not that everything is the 1980s. It's whatever you want it to be. But it was specifically like needing to have working knowledge of the interests of the creator of the game is so critical to winning the contest that everyone, the entire world thought, this could be me. I could win the lottery. I could get out of this shitty life because everything's terrible.
Well, has that been like from day one, has the contest been ongoing, or has it been like... Because my only having seen the trailers is that it's like this world exists and then the guy who's been running it all of a sudden dies and his death is the thing that triggers the contest.
Right, yes. The contest has not been on from day one. Okay. It's been from his death. It's a surprise announcement thing.
Is the dude who runs the Oasis before he dies, is he like philanthropic at all? Like, does he like help these poor people who live in trailer parks stacked a mile high?
I believe from the book that's a thing. There's a lot. I mean, it's been at this point years since I've read it, but
I mean, I guess I should just read it if I have these questions. But it's like, if you have the short answer, if you like, I'm just trying to understand how the world works in the future.
He seemed like a nice dude, though a little bit aloof from reality.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but basically, like that is why the world of the movie works the way it does, and they never explain it. So it just seems like the movie is pandering to you violently.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it, but like, it's so dumb. They could have just included one simple line because clearly that's a thing in the film, but they didn't do it. So that might be the key to enjoying the movie. I guess I'll say that. Now, Pacific Rim 2 also came out, and that's a movie that I'm likewise skeptical of because though John Boyega famously said, I'm not doing this film unless they get it right, I don't really know who John Boyega is as a person. I know that I like seeing him on screen. I know that I like seeing him talk. But, like, I don't know that I like his taste in movies. So, if...
I think the only thing I've seen him in is Star Wars.
So, I'm curious what, you know, what does getting it right mean to John Boyega? Is Pacific Rim 2 not being directed by Guillermo del Toro, not being written by Travis Beecham, could it possibly be good?
Well, you know, and the final product may not be the same film he agreed to make.
It might not be, though.
Am I the only person that's seen it?
Yes.
Oh, what the hell? I thought you guys would be a little bit more interested to go out and see it right away because, like, the first one was so awesome.
I gladly would. Were it not for these other mitigating factors of everything that like I felt embodied why the first one was good, not being a part of this production.
Oh well, I can't tell you that I thoroughly enjoyed Pacific Rim 2. It was sort of a I mean, it was definitely a sequel. It took place after the first one. The rift was still closed, and they're just trying to like live in this post-kaiju society and trying to rebuild the planet and make it you know, normal and habitable again. And it sort of follows, John Boyega's character is sort of like scavengering. Like he's like, he was a Jaeger pilot, but like,
well, he's supposed to be Pentecost's son, right? And he's just like, there's that whole hero worship for his dad from society, and he's like, wants no part of it.
Right. Yeah. Like he's the son of the famous Jaeger pilot that helped seal the rift. And, you know, he was in the Jaeger training, but at some point he was like, why am I doing this? And like, I'm just going to go have fun. It kind of follows him and a group of like young Jaeger pilots, that he gets sort of pushed back into the program, and he becomes like their mentor. And, you know, they're still prepared for kaijus to come back. They've got like, they've still got a bunch of Jaegers. They're still maintaining them. They're just kind of sitting around collecting dust, and they're, you know, doing lots of simulator work, and they'll show them off every now and then. But at the beginning of the movie, like nothing's going on pretty much. Like there's not the constant threat of like, oh crap, we have to go, there's kaijus coming. Mm. So that's really interesting. And then I really don't want to give away much more than that, because, the way that the threat comes into play is extremely interesting.
Hmm.
And like the real like villain and the real threats are like not what you would think they would be.
Interesting.
So I don't want to go too much more into it, but it'll surprise you. I thought it was amazing. Like kaijus do come back, but the way that they come back is like crazy.
Okay.
And it's not just like, oh, and the rift opened again randomly. Like that's not it. Like stuff that happened in the first movie comes back and
pays off stuff or whatever.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do we get more of the world of the kind of like Charlie Day and Ron Perlman like world that was so compelling?
Ron Perlman isn't in it, but Charlie's in it, and the other scientist guy, I forget his name. But the two scientists from the first movie are very much a giant part of this movie. And
no pun intended, am I right?
Because everything's large.
Well, now yes. having heard what you've said, now I have a guess as to, but I kind of like, do I want to make that guess like on
in case it spoils it?
Yeah, in case I'm right.
Well, there were a lot of fan theories swirling around beforehand, and one of them might have been close to correct. The other thing is there's another faction that I didn't mention is trying to replace Jaegers with drones. So there's no more drifting. Like they're just going to replace them with Jaegers that can basically just be remote controlled.
Do they say like, this doesn't make sense. There's no way to have an analog Jaeger, and we should just have all computer Jaegers anyway. And, I mean, I love the first film, but they're it's a stupid movie.
yeah. I never understood the whole like, oh, your brain can't handle controlling a whole Jaeger. That's why we have to split the load between two people. Like, I don't get that, but like, you just kind of have to say, okay, and move on with it. Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, the drone Jaegers could be controlled by one person.
Because okay. The artificial intelligence is the second person.
Yeah, sure.
We've had a little bit of actual giant robot news lately, and not good.
Yeah, I've only seen this. I haven't looked into it a whole lot. Just the whole Megabots is bankrupt, and is what Matt Cavalcanti is the last one.
I've actually never been sure which one's Matt and which one was Guy. But yeah, it appears. So Megabots, the giant robot fighting competition thing that we're all quite excited about. We've interviewed them in the past. You know, it got to the point where the fight actually happened. We were all a bit like nonplussed by what happened.
Yeah, they turned it into a live stream event that was a, you know, live stream that was a broadcast of the recording they made, where they basically did giant robot WWE.
Yeah. It was not thrilling. And
I think it really could have been if they would have edited it down to about an hour.
Yeah.
If they would have just like kept it fast paced and like showed just the action and maybe cut out even parts of the fights. Like it could have been extremely interesting, I think.
Yeah. The thing that kind of annoyed me from the get go watching it was the first 30 minutes was basically like promo trailers for each company that we'd all seen already.
Mm-hmm.
And it was broadcast here at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I get what they were trying to do, but if they wanted to like get people's interest and get people hyped about it, they should have.
Well, they promoted it and hyped it like it was going to be a live, like, you know, like a live like a event. Fight. Yeah. Like not a scripted, you know, scripted thing.
Yeah. And which I guess is why they wanted to do most of it mostly uncut, where you have like a lot of the downtime where the robots are just kind of there and they're just
I think that really hurt them more than anything else.
Sure. I just think that like they mistakenly thought, let's see, if we make this like a pay-per-view event, it'll seem like a legit sport thing, which is what they would dream of it becoming.
No.
But nerds don't really
there are some really cool moments in those fights, but like you had to watch a lot of stuff to get to them.
Yeah.
Like
yeah. And
like at one point the announcers almost got killed because the robots got too close to the announcer table and like they demolished
it. That was like the worst part of that because it was so obviously scripted.
Like, yeah. And they're like, he's grabbing like some of the lighting girders. It's like, oh, it's perfectly sized right there for him to grab. It's, you know, I'm pretty sure.
But like I said, they could have edited that into something awesome.
Sure. You know, or at least like say, hey, just take that and make a trailer out of it and say, hey, this is
the like fight. They could have just hyped up one of the drivers as being like psycho, like this guy's crazy.
We don't know what he's going to do. And then it's like then have the driver go crazy, be like, I am the machine. I must destroy humanity. Who could stop me? And then the other robot has to be like, I will stop you and save humanity.
He's a real loose cannon. Oh, no, he's breaking out the loose cannon.
So you're saying if they're going to make it scripted, you should make it like professional wrestling.
Yeah.
If they had promoted that and like that is what they hyped the entire time, that would have been great. But it's not.
Cut to like pre-recorded supposed quote-unquote insert shots of the inside of the cabin where like electricity courses through the pilot's body. And he's just like, I am one with the machine now. He's got circuit boards on his face.
You know, it's not what I wanted, but I would have been like, all right, yeah, let's do it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It would've been great. But, you know, I mean, and who would have thought that giant robots would not be sustainable financially?
Yeah, it was a risk to begin with, but now it's even riskier because if there is to be any kind of future in what they've built so far, it's down to one dude, as Trench said, and he has no staff. There's this very sobering YouTube video you can watch.
I almost feel bad because it's like he's like party clown level of like, somebody hire me to do stuff with this giant robot.
Yeah, I mean, and like there was a dude who is, you know, basically his brother in arms there, and he's not there, and they're not talking about it. Like, I don't know what happened, but maybe a genuine falling out, or maybe he's like, no, reality check, man, you're living in a dream, and we got to just say no. You know, that's possible too. Who knows? But
I don't know. Like, it's just each of those robots is so much more expensive than the BattleBots.
Yes.
And they couldn't justify the cost difference because watching BattleBots is so much more interesting.
I mean, this is all hindsight 2020, and these robots were basically halfway built before they even announced they were going to fight,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
But like, part of me wonders, like, if they'd said, hey, all right, our dream is to make it big, but what if we did it at half the size we're talking about our dreams are, you know?
Like, yeah, and like, then like, hey, maybe we should take the pilots out of it.
Yeah, the first one, yeah. Like, it's like people liked BattleBots on, you know, like when they're tiny.
Have you seen the new BattleBots?
Some of it's fucking crazy.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So like,
they removed a lot of the restrictions and they can like use flamethrowers and all this other stuff now.
Human sized BattleBots.
Well,
already I'm sold. Like, I don't need the giant one.
In popular culture, what has happened most recently is films like Real Steel and Big Hero 6, which highlight how awesome BattleBot scenarios can be when they are remote controlled, like in, but with, you know, with technology, it's a little bit more like, you know, not a Roomba with a chainsaw. You know,
when we were at GMX several years ago, and there was a little BattleBot stage with, it was like a big shoebox made of like clear plexiglass and stuff. And they had robots going in there, and two robots enter, one robot leave. And, there was one that I remember, I can't remember the name of it, but I probably have it saved somewhere. Took video of it. They took a hard drive, like the motor that spins the hard drive, and they just attached a buzzsaw to it, and it would and it fucking destroyed. And then like part of it like kind of broke loose, so it like it was like a gyroscope went off balance, so it started buzzing around unintentionally like the Tasmanian devil inside this box, up and down and up and down, banging on the roof and coming back down. It was insane. Sparks going everywhere. It was on a wooden platform. The wooden chips were flying around inside this box.
And that's what people want.
Yeah. It was like robot on robot carnage, and that was amazing. And then, but if you blow it up and it's really huge, then it's kind of slow and, you know, and,
yeah, and
they can't really, humans can't really like kill each other in it.
But I really like that idea though, like, because all we need is battle bots with different weight classes.
Yes.
Or not only that, but going back to like, you know, the fact that it's expensive, mm-hmm. they didn't want to go ripping arms off of it or, you know, being
right.
you know, destroying the robots. And it's just like, that's the whole point, and you're not doing it.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, he shot a paintball.
And it didn't. BBs. He shot a BB gun.
He slowly knocked him over. That's going to take him a little while to set back up.
And I understand why they wanted to have the pilots in it. But yeah, if they weren't like... I don't know. Like, just do it half size. Like, make. No one wanted to destroy the thing that they put all that work into. Then why are you fighting? You know. Then make a small half sized one, and then destroy that. You know, make it easily repairable.
What they should have done is if they didn't want to fight in them, maybe they should have had the robots just practice diplomacy with their human counterparts inside. You know, like just have like
down your arms, sir.
Japanese tea drinking ceremony.
They stand behind a podium. They just like they speak very. Gregariously about some subject that's important to them and raise their arms up and down, and maybe if they get really angry they pulverize that podium into splinters, but otherwise, you know, that's all they want to do.
The fight is what people want to see, but it would have been interesting if they said, oh, you know what, we can't really do a fight because they're still too fragile at this point, so here we'll do it in the meantime is we're going to have a giant field full of scarecrows that represent an oncoming battalion of people like running up the hill, and we're just going to run through and just like and have mortars going off and all this other, just something that would be a spectacle, you know, something that would be huge and crazy, something you wouldn't see. You can't see a robot actually mowing down people. That'd be crazy. But if you simulate it and make it funny, that would be fun.
Yeah.
We've got some good ideas here. I think we need some funding for better battle bots.
Mm-hmm. Just call it better battle bots.
Yeah, let's just do that.
B cubed. B cubed.
So send all your money. We'll start up a Kickstarter.
we promise it's not a gamble.
I'm going to tune in a year later. It's like, we don't know how to build any of these robots. We'll get inside the cardboard box, for God's sake. And just
Roomba with knives taped to it.
We didn't specify they'd be made of metal or controlled by electronics.
It's like the episode of The Simpsons where Homer's wearing the robot as just a costume, and he's fighting them. He's
getting
stabbed.
Something else that happened recently was Lost in Space on Netflix, which I've seen the first episode of. I actually don't know how many episodes there are. Boar, you've seen...
I've watched like six or seven.
Yeah.
Something like that. And I loved it so far. What did you think of the first episode?
It has really good production value, but I'm not sure I'm going to keep going.
Really?
There's things that intrigue me to see where it goes next. Like the first episode focuses specifically on the Robinson family, and the adjacent characters like Dr. Smith are not implemented yet. You see that you get a tease of them at the very end, which was compelling.
Uh-huh.
But there's a thing that's been happening recently where people want to do a revival of the heroic science family archetype. But I feel like in the 21st century, no one really knows how to write that correctly. Like, I recently finished reading the DC Comics revival of the Jetsons, which was a 6-part miniseries written by Jimmy Palmiotti. And it started with a lot of promise, like things like the Jetsons' grandmother is dying, and she puts her brain inside the Rosie body, which is a procedure that's offered by the competing company of Cogsgrove or whatever it is.
Cogsgrove is the company.
Yeah, right, yes, yeah. So that was really great. That was a short story. It wasn't even a full comic. And I was very compelled by this, like, discuss, you know, like, here's this Jetsons comic having, like, subverting our expectations about the robot maid and talking about, like, life extension via cybernetics. And
sure, that's what she wanted. She wanted to live forever as a robot slave.
Well, she's not a maid. That's not the thing. She's not a maid, but she is a grandma. And grandmas, you know, cook breakfast for their grandkids.
Taking the Rosie the Robot into a different direction in the comic, in the sense that she her role is more like a member of the family.
She's not a maid. Okay. In this book, okay. She's not a maid.
Yeah, that's the only part of that I've seen is the whole, like, you know, grandma gets her brain put in a robot body, and it's basically like she's having this, you know, second, you know, life rebirth type thing where she's just
more like Edie in Mass Effect.
Yeah.
Okay.
But when the actual series kicked in, it everyone was a little, like, too perfect, and they all, like, this very white science family were just, they weren't even, like, an extension or subversion of the values of the
1950s. I think that you'll find that when you watch a little bit more, they're not anywhere near as perfect as they appear.
Well, that's the other thing. With Lost in Space, it has that, and everyone's very good at what they do, and, like, the mom's a scientist, and the dad's, a military dude who's very good at his job, and Will doesn't handle crises very well, but he's extremely smart, and the other kids are great. But they all have flaws. They all have big flaws. It seems like the family almost, like, broke up before eventually going on this, inevitably disastrous colonization attempt.
How much of the robot was in the first episode?
He meets the family.
Okay.
The thing was, though, is that I felt like all the family drama, them all, like, hating each other and flashing back to, like, what happened on Earth and all that, it's fine, but it reminded me a little bit too much of Lost.
It's like Lost, but in space.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's not. I mean, if you take that flashback aspect, sure, that sort of works as a comparison, but
you find that it's a flash forward.
The difference between Lost and Lost in Space is that Lost was terrible, and this one is not.
Well, but Lost was of the space. Lost was extremely compelling from the first feature length episode and had some of the best single episodes in television history. But by the end of it, was a terrible narrative.
I mean, I disagree with a lot of what you just said, but
okay,
I thought it was terrible from the beginning.
Well,
but that's just me.
But, like, there are a lot of things about it to like, but the problem is they're like, everyone's so smart. This is all, like, very, very, like, in the vein of hard sci-fi, but then they'll do a bunch of really stupid things that I couldn't come to terms with. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's a character that gets stuck in the ice, and so they go to get some magnesium to try to burn them out of the ice, because they're, like, they're frozen in place, but they've got, like, diminishing oxygen in a spacesuit. And, They just put one spot of magnesium down and then just dig at that and, like, not, like, create a perimeter around the body in any kind of logical way. And there's just all these things that are, like, little things that like, for example, Will's climbing up a tree and he's doing it in a panic, but he doesn't recognize this gigantic thing on the second branch that he's going to that, like, you totally would have noticed was there. It's a lot of, like, weird, obvious stuff that I'm like, come on. Like, there's so much about this that is working. The production value is so high. And it's clearly you want this to be a smart show, but everyone's behaving rather dumbly.
I think maybe you need to give it a couple more episodes before a final judgment.
Yeah.
I found the robot extremely compelling in this one because I feel like in the other Lost in Space, didn't the robot like come with them from Earth or something?
Are you talking about the film?
The movie, yeah.
From like 10 plus years
ago. Well, there's the movie and then there's the original show. I haven't seen the original show. I've seen episodes of it. I don't remember almost anything about it. I have seen some of it, but
I don't recall if the original robot was an Earth robot or if it was an alien robot, but the one in the movie was from Earth.
Yeah, it was
like a protector robot.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But this one, the robot's an alien that they find.
Right. Which is cool.
Like an alien AI. Yeah, I think it's a really cool take on it.
Mass Effect in space.
And there's some more interesting things about the robot that I probably shouldn't say anything about. But I would give it a couple more episodes because like Dr. Smith obviously hasn't stepped into it yet.
Yeah,
and
everything that happened,
she's like a conniving bastard, just like the any other incarnation of Dr. Smith.
all that stuff that happened in the past, in like the last 5 minutes of the first episode, were the most compelling parts of the entire episode.
Yeah.
And I felt like they took something that could have been, it shouldn't, that I was like, I was just not interested in this family drama at all. And
yeah, I actually kind of felt similar to how you feel at the end of the first episode. I was like, I don't know, that was kind of good, but I'm not sure. And I gave it a couple more episodes and I was hooked.
Okay. Well, it's worthwhile. I am pretty curious about what's going to happen with Dr. Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that's that thing.
I haven't checked out. I've been meaning to watch it. I know Dan's watched some of it and has liked it.
It hasn't been around for that long. It's only been like, what, a week?
Maybe. I don't even know. Time is still, I'm still catching up to what exactly has been happening in the world in sequence from all the traveling. Yeah, so has anyone been playing God of War? Is that, have you guys touched that yet?
I definitely have.
Yeah?
I got it like immediately.
And, tell me everything.
And I've been playing it a lot. So one of my favorite things about the new God of War is that they didn't get the original voice actor to play Kratos this time around. They got Christopher Judge, who was Teal'c on Stargate SG-1.
I remember we talked about this. It's like, it's a shame they're not going after the Egyptian pantheon.
Like, yeah. I mean, they might in a future game. That's awesome. totally possible, because they've... in this game, they have actually established that Kratos is the Kratos from the other ones. He's not like some parallel version of Kratos. Mm-hmm. It is the same guy. Like, he did jump from one pantheon of gods to like a completely different reality, I guess. And it is acknowledged that he was once a god, or still sort of is. So he's definitely the same guy. The graphics are just insane, and the gameplay is a lot different from the other games. Like, it's not as button mashy as
no QTEs, or are they still got those in them?
There's an occasional one, but they're very downplayed, and they don't happen all the time. Like, every time in previous games, like, if you would grab a monster and like rip it apart or something, you would have to do a full quick time event, otherwise it would fail and the monster would still be alive. But this one, if you get to the point where you can grab the monster, he just rips them apart, like, and you don't have to do a bunch of nonsense. But the difficulty level is a little bit higher than previous games also. Like, it, I actually had to turn the difficulty down so I wasn't so frustrated.
Like, Monster Hunter difficulty sort of things? Like strategy, or like, or just how much
I would
much
say it's more like Dark Souls.
Oh, okay.
Like, if you turn it up too high, then you're just gonna have a bad time because it's not fair.
Like, it's a one hit kill on you, basically. Like,
oh yeah, I definitely experienced a couple of one hit kill moments.
You're supposed to be a God of War.
Yeah.
You get scratched and you go, game over.
Things have changed, Doug. He's got a kid now.
But Christopher Judge did an amazing job voicing Kratos. I really loved it. There was even one SG-1 Easter egg in there, which I was like, oh my God, he said it. But yeah, there's some moments like that. And the combat being different is the biggest part of it for me. Instead of having like the Blades of Chaos, where he's like dual wielding these cool like chain mounted wrist blades, he has just like this axe. He's just got like a one-handed axe.
Very Nordic, right?
And like a wrist mounted shield that kind of like deploys on demand, which is pretty interesting.
And he can like throw the axe, right?
Yeah, you can throw the axe and it comes back to you magically, like it's some sort of a magical elf made axe.
Mm-hmm.
So he can throw the axe and pull it back to him, and you can fight with or without the axe, and then it's just your fists and the shield. So, like, Kratos will be beating the living crap out of somebody, and then, like, he'll, like, deploy the shield and beat him in the face. And then he still has the Spartan Rage ability from previous games, where, like, you click down both of the sticks if you have your rage meter high enough, and he'll just beat the living crap out of anything. But he just uses his fists this time around. Before, it would, like, empower your blades and... You know, you'd beat the crap out of it. But in this one, he'll just put his axe away and just start wailing on people with his fists.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I heard it's a little bit more of an RPG.
Yeah, it is. His axe is, like, upgradable. You have to choose which talent trees you spend your experience on. He he can get different armor that actually has different stats. So you're playing the stat game in this one. Like, do I want the armor that, you know, adds in strength, or do I want more defense, or do I want more runic ability, which is kind of like the magical abilities that the axe has. Mm. It's interesting. I'm not used to having to do that kind of stuff on a God of War game. There was a little bit of that in a previous one where you could, you know, you could choose to power up the Blades of Chaos versus some of the magic that he would acquire throughout the game, but you didn't have to worry about like armor stats or like which talisman or which axe handle are you gonna have on your axe and stuff like that. So
that's cool.
It is a bit different, but in a good way. I like it a lot. It was very difficult putting it down to come to this recording.
are you a subscriber to Stargate Command, the Stargate streaming service?
No, I am not.
No?
All of it is on Hulu. I don't see the point.
Is it really?
Yeah, I've got Hulu. Hulu has SG-1. It's got Atlantis. It's got Stargate Universe. Don't see the point.
Because they've been bombarding me with ads on YouTube for whatever reason. And I'm just, it's just like, all Stargate movies. I'm like, I only remember one real movie. It's like, well, TV movies too. I'm like, oh, okay. And
then it responds to Doug's voice in real time.
Yeah, that's how.
That's the future.
Yeah, you know, and it's like every show, and I'm like, there's only like three or four shows really, and like I don't even know if I would subscribe to, like, if you said, oh, right, there's a Star Trek streaming service, every Star Trek movie ever made, and every Star Trek show, and
dude,
every
I have Netflix.
Right, that's the thing. It's like, I already have that, but even if Netflix didn't have that, say, and Hulu didn't have it, would it really be worth it? You know what I mean? Like, to get all that? And yeah, with Stargate, as cool as it is, it's even less.
Yeah.
So, like, I couldn't imagine doing a monthly thing for
it. Wait, what about Stargate is less?
There's less of Stargate than there is of Star Trek.
I was going to say, I thought you were implying that its worth was less.
No,
and
no,
I was
no,
going to
no.
get mad.
No, no, I'm not saying. I'm not, okay. No,
I'm implying
saying,
that.
Fuck you, Trench.
There's way less movies and there's way less episodes of a show, so it's like a monthly thing. I feel like if I really wanted to, I could breeze through it like in no time and then be like, all right, I've seen it. Why do I want to keep
subscribing? You could binge it all in a month.
Yeah.
And it's like, why do I want to maintain the subscription?
The monthly subscription part.
Or you could subscribe to Hulu and have other stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me ask you a question. Do you have old shirts that are nerdy but have holes in them, or simply are too stretched out from wearing them over the last 1, 2, or even 5 years? Well, boy howdy, do I have a suggestion for you. Toss out your old crummy clothes or donate to a thrift store. I mean, come on. Replace them with genuine Nerdy Show t-shirts. Yes, you heard me right. You too can replace your faded Mario or Game of Thrones tees with the likes of your favorite Nerdy Show Network show. Show support for Nerdy Show to your friends. Just get a peek at Thor and astound all around you with its glory. So eliminate the ragged shirts of yesteryear and replace your wardrobe with the shirts that Nerdy Show has to offer. Just follow the links at nerdyshow.com/nerdystore. That was a poorly read advertisement brought to you by Jeffrey McSorley, who is a Patreon subscriber who has
said, let me ask you a question, and I was genuinely ready to answer, but you didn't slow down.
I'm sorry.
And now you're not going to get that answer.
Damn it! Shit!
The question was, do you have any poor old shirts? And you, no.
Yep, that was it. That was it.
Well, I'm not sorry for this.
I take care of my clothes.
SCMA Bookstore, 1112 Stephen Street.
You were literally reading the same receipt from last time.
It's still on the table.
Doug, file that in your taxes. It's a business expense.
Yeah, all right.
You should see the thing.
I didn't think I was going to get that much mileage out of that bit.
Well, if you dig the show, if you dig the shows we put out here on the Nerdy Show Network, you should definitely support us on Patreon at patreon.com/nerdyshow. Since our last full cast recording, we do have 3 new patrons to give shout-outs to.
Ooh.
Well, please welcome Daniel Taylor, Josh Hufford, and Robert Underwood.
Welcome. Welcome, one and all.
We also want to give a shout out to Kutsushita, who provided us with a $50 donation. Very, very kind of you.
Damn.
And I want to tell everybody, hey, look, we need your help. We do need your help very much. Now, we realize that the Nerdy Show Network, has been putting out less of the shows that you love. The Dungeons and Doritos, Ghostbusters Resurrection are both on hiatus. We're still in production for Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program Season 2. But in order to complete all that stuff, in order to help fund the release of those things, we do still need a sustained amount. And we are at this point on our Patreon very close to being at the point where we're not making any money. We are just making ends meet. And by making money, I mean generating income that we can throw at sound design, editing, and all the other stuff that we need to make sure those shows can come back. So I recognize that those shows aren't coming out now, but if you do support us on Patreon, you are investing in funds that will be largely spent on the development of those shows. Like, that's where the money goes, for the most part, is into stuff like that. So please do consider it. Even $1 a month helps. That's just $12 a year. That's nothing. And you get early releases for whatever comes out, including Ghostbusters Resurrection. It hasn't happened yet, but sooner or later, before we release it to the world, Ghostbusters Resurrection episodes will be available on the Patreon, simply because we don't want to put them out to the public until we're ready to resume a regular schedule. And mm-hmm. It could be multiple months in between when Doug is finished editing these suckers. Mm-hmm.
But as soon as they are done, they'll be available to patrons right away.
Yeah. One other unfortunate thing is that it seems for the time being, Matasm, the artist for our Ghostbusters Resurrection art, is going to have to step back. He's got a lot of things going on in his life. He recently, not so very long ago, had twins. Mm-hmm. So we need a new artist for Ghostbusters Resurrection. And I haven't really started searching yet, but if anyone has any ideas for someone who can match the style and integrity of what Matasm has done over the years, we would appreciate that very much. That would be, you know, that's a paying gig and another thing we need to spend money on, but it's something worth doing. I mean, we're not going to stop the release of the show if all of a sudden we've got all the episodes ready to rock and no art for it. We're going to put them out with a standard issue image, but we do love having that artwork. We love having those things visualized like that. So if you have any recommendations, please do let us know. And also, speaking of recommendations, I recommend that April 27th through 29th, if you're anywhere near New York City or looking for an excuse to go to New York City, you go to Coney Island and check out the Nerdlesque Festival. That's a fest that Lefty Lucy's been putting on the past several years. This year features 32 of the best nerdy burlesque performers around the globe. No kidding, this is an international thing with where they submit their acts and all that. So if you want to see the nerdiest, nudiest shows you're ever going to see, you definitely want to hit up the Nerdlesque Festival. It's at thenerdlesquefest.com.
And I don't know about that. Hungnerds.com.
Hungnerds.com does not exist. I have not bought the URL. And also, I'm not sure we've established the gag on Nerdy Show.
We must have before.
Yeah. We've done it before.
But the Nerdlesque Fest is a real thing at nerdlesquefest.com, and it's happening April 27th to 29th, and also happening every single year. If you miss it this year, plan for it next year.
Chugle
on down to Coney Island.
We still got buyyourwaytocool.com, right?
Of course we do.
Why don't we have hungnerds.com?
Because I don't want to spend Nerdy Show money on that. If someone wants to buy hungnerds.com for us, where we can, I don't know, redirect it to a picture of Matt, a.k.a. Trench, then...
I'll do it, and I'll make it about suicide.
Oh. Jesus.
Well, that got dark.
Very quickly. Also, if there's no money that you have to spend, we do understand. You do, however, probably shop for things on Amazon, so please do consider using our Amazon links at nerdyshow.com/Amazon. We have a U.S. store, a U.K. store, a Canada store, and we have links to those storefronts through our affiliate links, and that helps us a lot. We at least net around $100 a month from that, and that's a good thing. But we can't rely on that because it's based on people buying stuff. And also, you can spend a little time on us, rate and review us on iTunes or SoundCloud. iTunes is, of course, still the number one place for podcast discovery, and we sure could use your help. It has been a very long time since we have had a review from iTunes to read, or even just a new rating. Rating's super easy. You can just hop on there and click 5 stars, and that'll do us a world of good, and it's very simple. But if you want to leave a rating, we will read it. There's also Podchaser, where you can rate and review specific episodes, like how, for example, Barry I did for one of our prior episodes, the one where I talked to Eric Burnham, the writer of Ghostbusters, and Tom Waltz, the writer of Ninja Turtles over at IDW Comics, about the weirdest iterations and incarnations and characters of the Ninja Turtles. Barry I said, exploring the intricacies of the weirder parts of the Turtles universe makes for some interesting listening. As always, I love the podcast. Thanks, Barry I.
I mean, we're probably short on time by now, but have you ever talked about the most recent, like, designs for the Turtles?
I have not, outside of having talked with Kevin Eastman, the creator of Turtles, about it in the one of the shows we put out recently was a conversation between myself, Kevin Eastman, Tom Waltz, who I just mentioned, and Benjamin Bishop, the one of the Turtles artists, where they talk about how, like, you know, we've seen the new show. It's going to be, like, it's, you know, trust us, it's actually, like, it's quite compelling. Everyone has reservations every time they resurrect the Turtles and so on and so forth. I personally have not shared my feelings on the new Turtles designs. I don't reject the art style overall. I do think the shape of the Turtles' heads is a little weird, like, in a kind of way that I feel like doesn't gel with each other. Having them all be different species of Turtles. This is a new show on Nickelodeon called Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They're all the Turtles are different species because they're all, you know, just a bunch of, I don't know if they're changing their origins at all, but presumably, you know, there's still a bowl of Turtles that get exposed to mutagen, and it doesn't have to be the origin. It could be something completely different, but, like, Leo's a red slider and has, like, red streaks across his eyes, and Raph is a snapping turtle and he's hulking and gigantic and is for some reason the leader of the team in this iteration.
Yeah, that was that Raph's the leader, and that Donatello is a hover bike for April.
What? No, he's not.
There's that image where he's got, like, he's giving April a ride on his shell where he's got all this techno stuff attached to him. He's basically a hover bike.
Well, there's a still, I believe that Donnie's flying on his own and April is independently riding a hover bike, which I imagine Donnie built, but.
And that one, it was like she was riding on him.
Maybe I need to look at it again. I'm not sure about that. but I like April's design a lot. I think I might like the human designs more than the turtle designs. I don't love Splinter's design either. He's very, very short and squat. And I mean, Kevin Eastman says he's actually quite funny, or maybe it was Tom Waltz who said it. I don't recall, but I'll wait and see. The turtles are continually rebooted in extremely dramatic ways. And though I like the prior series, there are certainly criticisms I could leverage against that as well. But I haven't liked any of them as much as I've liked the 2003 series.
Right there.
Show me. That is interesting. Okay, yeah. You're right, Matt. I did not realize that Donatello's shell flipped up and turned into a hover bike that April could ride. I thought that Donatello was in the foreground and April was in the background. I did not realize these two things were connected. That's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
That's very unfortunate. Though it seems like maybe a neat action figure, but that's unfortunate. Now, you mentioned the Stargate subscription service.
Yeah.
I mean, boy, they could easily do that for the Turtles. And unlike Stargate, there's a bunch of things that are rare enough that people wouldn't be able to easily get a hold of them.
That's true.
That would be interesting. I don't know that I would spend money on it necessarily because I have what I want, but there's no good way to watch the 2003 Turtle series that I know of right now. And it's incredible. And it's many hundreds of episodes long. And certainly if you want to indulge in some very,
there's a few other random one-off ones that were like, I remember I went on a binge of Turtles animated opening sequences. Like, I watched the original, and it's like, related videos, this one. I'm like, oh, yeah, there's a 2003 one. And then there's other ones that I hadn't even heard of, and there's other ones in different languages. And I'm like, are these the same show? It was really strange.
There's a lot, including that time that Power Rangers and Turtles crossed over, you know?
Like, yeah.
So that could be a thing. But I don't really see that franchise-specific subscription services are going to go anywhere. I think the Stargate one is going to fail miserably. Because there's ways for people to get that content otherwise, you know? I don't know.
Maybe they're hoping that they could do... I do have to say, one thing I should have mentioned about it was that it was launching a new show with it.
Oh!
Yeah.
There's Stargate Origins.
Yeah.
Which is like a prequel to all of the Stargates.
Yeah. It's how they found the original Stargate on Earth.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Mm. So... I guess if you're a big fan, you're like, well, I want to see that new show, and these other stuff is a bonus. So sure, you know. Then
is that out yet?
I saw the trailer for it. I don't know if it's out and ready.
I'm not 100% sure. It's soon, if not already.
Isn't it weird that CBS would do their thing with Star Trek Discovery and not do you know, a Star Trek ride thing. But Disney, of course, is like next year putting out the Disney subscription service, which is not just Disney animated films and television, you know, live action stuff as well, but also Star Wars and also Marvel.
Oh, no. So they're probably going to take it all off Netflix.
Oh, that's guaranteed. We know that.
I mean, they've already... Oh, no, it's with Redbox. They've got an ongoing legal dispute because Redbox was like, you know, buying the... It's some kind of distribution issue, but basically Disney doesn't want stuff to be on Redbox anymore.
I'd imagine it's quality control because you have a skipped skipping disc, which is probably what happens more often than not with Redbox. And
that's a toss more for of a people like I've I think never...
it's got to do with like the stuff that they put in the vault, and it's a limited release, so you can't get it. So they don't want you to just be able to rent it on Redbox.
That's a very good point. I was gonna say but Redbox for me, I've never had a problem with a disc skipping on Redbox. I know some people like it's all that ever happens to them, but
well, Blu-rays are like scratch resistant.
Maybe that's the difference.
Maybe that is the difference. Written Blu-rays over written DVDs. I don't know. One last thing before we go. There's a Labyrinth comic that's out now, an ongoing, well, maybe not ongoing, probably a limited series. They've done Labyrinth comics in the past. They've been usually one-off things, but this one is different. Mostly those are just tales from around the Labyrinth and in and around the time period that Sarah was saving her brother. This is called Labyrinth Coronation, and it is the story of how Jareth came to be the Goblin King, which I, as a longtime Labyrinth fan, was extremely resistant to. Why do we need to know that? The same prequel problem that we have time and time again. I'm uninterested in hearing how that was the thing that happened. Why is he not just, an entity from, with his own explanation, but, why would he have ties to origins on Earth even though he's human? Maybe he's not. He turns into an owl after all. How do we know what he is? In early drafts of the script, and I don't think they ever ended up filming it, but they came damn close. When Sarah says, "You have no power over me," at the end, he shrinks into a pile of clothes and a little goblin scrabbles away out there. He doesn't turn into an owl and fly off. Like, he was just like a very powerful goblin. So we don't know what he is, but now we definitively do. But the thing is, though, this book is great. It's really good. I have no regrets now. I came into it with extreme skepticism. It's written by Simon Spurrier, who's done a lot of work that I liked, including the recent sci-fi series Angelic about a bunch of genetically engineered animals on a destroyed Earth where no humans are left. And it's like it's a bunch of flying monkeys versus like manatees in these like hover pods. and it's super cool. But this Labyrinth book, it largely takes place so far in Venice, which is appropriate because the first time I ever went to Venice, I was like, this is so weird. This is exactly like Labyrinth. I can't find my way anywhere. It's like a maze and it's all like kind of looks like the Labyrinth. Maybe this is the inspiration. Maybe it was because it appears to be a massive like touchstone for this book and perhaps an explanation why that Venetian style has bled over into the Jareth era of the Labyrinth itself. And I'm not going to go into it more because there's lots of unexpected things, but it's very neat and went in a lot of directions I did not expect. Two issues so far. Head to your local comic shop. Well, all right then, folks. We'll see you next week, in which we're going to be discussing creative video games. Video games that enable you to make art, old school ones.
So Minecraft?
Minecraft is touched on, but like before that, like creative suites, like Mario Paint. And we're going to be speaking with a person from Fangamer, Jazzy Benson, who is a Mario Paint animator on the scale of you've never witnessed before. You've never seen Mario Paint animation like this. So we're going to be talking with her about what she does and then also about a bunch of other bizarre pieces of software that let you create in the early 90s and late 80s. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.